You are now listening to Talking Transparency, the podcast where trans parents talk transparently, hosted by Thea Ross, Melissa Lukson, and Cody Connor.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Thea.
On today's episode, we are talking transparently with Sabrina Scarlett. She is a musician and ODU student. But first, Thea is going to go over some upcoming events with Kayla's
Club. I just want to say thank you for having me real quick.
Of course, thank you for being here. And unfortunately, Cody could not be here tonight. He's working very, very hard, keeping everyone safe and happy. So I'm doing on the events. This month, we have a couple things coming up. On January 25th, we have our resume success workshop at the 757 Creative Reuse Center in Norfolk. That's in MacArthur Mall on the second floor. Also, later that week, we have our D&D club on the 27th, and that'll be at 6 to 8 p.m., for both of those, the workshop 6 to 8 p.m. and the D&D group is going to be from 6 to 8 p.m. And both of those are in MacArthur Mall in Norfolk. So that's what we've got for January. And then next month we have our trans family dinner again on the third Sunday of the month. We're going to be having fun with that this weekend, right, Melissa?
Yes, we are.
By the time y'all listen.
Yes, I get to attend this time.
We will have already had our tacos, but we haven't had our tacos just yet.
That's right.
But yes, that's what we've got going on in our world. What about you, Miss Sabrina? Introduce yourself. Tell us about yourself a little bit.
Well, hi, my name is Sabrina, and I'm just living life. I go to school at ODU. I'm an accounting major. I'm going to be graduating in about a year and a half, and I'm aiming for my CPA, get the 150 credit hours that I need for that. I'm also a music producer, DJ. And I'm trying to get into things that are related to music and the arts, like drawing and reading more and, you know, like making content, TikToks, YouTube shorts, and just the whole spectrum of things. I'm just really trying to expand and learn more. And I also really, really like to just do stuff. I'll just go to the pool in the middle of a school day. And I'll swim for like a good 30 minutes to an hour, and then I'll just go and then I'll just head to my next class. I'll just do stuff like that. Nice. And at the end of the day, I'm just here and I'm just living.
Self-care is very important.
Yes, it's super important.
So if you want to take that little bit of time, go jump in a pool, do it.
Oh, I need to. Well, I really need to because it's stressful these days.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's freezing outside. You can get me into a pool to save my life right
now. Well, it's indoors, so it's still. Oh. So it's still going to be the same temperature in the summer as it would be right now.
Yeah, okay. Except that that means I would have to dry my hair. I would have to do all the like bundle it back up. Oh my gosh, yeah, I'm kind of with you. I don't think I even want to indoor swim right now. I'm going to say this right now. It shouldn't be this cold without snow. I'm going to say it again. It was like 24 degrees when I woke up this morning. We're in Virginia. This is not cool.
Well, we're next to the ocean, though.
I know. I get it. But I don't. It's. We're done. I'm like. I'm ready for spring. I'm ready for summer.
We get the cold, but without the fun bits.
It's true. It's very true.
I miss white Christmases, where it would just be snowing outside on Christmas Day. We had it one time when I was like 5 or 6 years old. I remember it so vividly. Mm-hmm. And then the next year rolled around and I was confused. Why is it not snowing?
Right.
For opening gifts and the grass is green.
Wearing flip-flops and stuff.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. No. But I would say I looked outside and it's like, it's just not a nice day. The grass is green and it's all kind of doom and gloomy with how the clouds are just kind of gray, but there's no snow. And
yep, it's the worst.
You expect me to believe that Santa was
Santa's coming now?
Well, Santa already was there. Like I got the gifts and they said two dead name from Santa.
Oh no,
that's 5 years old. It's whatever.
You were five, okay? Yeah, which actually leads to. Let's kind of get started with some questions.
Yeah.
Just a little bit about you. You are a musician. How old were you when you started making music?
When I started making music or when I started expressing an interest in music?
Well, how about expressing an interest?
Birth?
You just came out with like head popping, just a beat in your step.
Essentially, I was like, I remember one of my earliest memories when I was like, what, 2 or 3 years old, and I would be in my dad's office on the weekend because he was the manager of that, of where he was at, and he had to do things, and he brought us with because mom was doing something. And we would just, I would just be sitting there in the chair, and I had this melody that was playing on loop, on repeat. And like, da, 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 fa, sol, la. And I would just do that on repeat for like hours and hours and hours. And then my dad would hear it and then hear it again and then hear it again and then hear it again. And it was like, can you please stop that?
Oh, yeah. So then you started deciding to make music. How old were you?
When I started playing music, it's interesting because when I decided to make music and be a musician was way before I got the opportunity.
Yeah, sure. What instruments do you play?
I play guitar, but I'm also an electronic producer, which mm-hmm. means that I go on the computer and I make buttons, yep. and those buttons make sounds, and I use those sounds to make people dance.
Make people move.
Mainly, but I also want to get into more emotionally driven songs.
Speaking of emotions,
it's worth noting that we are right next to NAS Oceana, and I think George Bush, I think USS George Bush just got back from deployment. So there's a lot of activity right now.
Yes, so we'll hear those flying, doing little buzz throughs.
But my dad used to play his classic rock records in the car in a little like classic rock radio. We had AC/DC, Kansas, Boston, Lynyrd Skynyrd, you know, like the real classic. Classics.
Like hair bands. We're talking like some of these folks are hair bands, 80s hair bands.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, and you can never take that away from me, even though I don't really listen to that much anymore. It's just such a nostalgia drive for me.
Yeah.
And I was listening to that over and over, and I was just hearing these guitar solos and people playing power chords. And the power chords were really drove me because I'm like, this is hard. I love this. Yeah. And I was really like, Dad, can I play guitar? Can I play guitar? Yeah. And he wanted me to start playing piano. 5 years old, and so he put me in piano lessons, but I didn't practice because I just wanted to play guitar.
You want to play guitar? So do you play piano too?
I really kind of regret not taking that more seriously nowadays because that is a really useful skill.
You're never too old to learn.
I'm not gonna learn.
You're not gonna learn?
Well, I use
keyboards.
I mean, I do use keyboards, and I know how to use them for writing purposes,
yeah, yeah.
and I know how to record in one for a clip.
Yeah.
But it's more of just being able to play something fluently in performance, that's my guitar.
It's your, yeah.
My guitar and my little DJ decks. Because,
are you acoustic or electric?
Oh, acoustic. All.
Acoustic? Yeah.
I mean, I started out doing like electric, you know, the classic rock sound, super heavy distortion.
Yeah.
I was doing that for a while, but mm-hmm. then I transitioned into acoustic later in life, around 14, right. because I was watching anime a lot at the time. Mm-hmm. I don't watch it a lot anymore now, but at the time, mm-hmm. I really got into the opening songs that animes would be using. And by chance, my recommended feed gave me acoustic guitar covers for a lot of these songs. And I would watch them, I would listen to them, and I would just be so like, this is amazing. This, like, I love this and I want to do this. So they would sometimes link material that allow you to learn how they did it, the arrangement that they came up with. And I picked up my guitar and I started practicing. And I from
can
that
you
point,
hear? Are you somebody that can like hear a melody and like pick up a guitar and play?
I do not have perfect pitch.
Okay, is that what that's called? Perfect pitch.
It's perfect pitch when you can hear a note and you can recognize the note immediately.
Oh, very cool.
You like Charlie Puth.
Right.
I was listening to a Charlie Puth interview and he just said, wind's blowing in F sharp today.
Oh my goodness.
It's that kind of thing. I'm definitely not that person.
Mathematical, yes. A bit, there is a little bit mathematical. Like you, it's fascinating to me that you're a musician, but like you're studying accounting.
Yeah, I am.
And I know, I love that. You know, there's a kind of a joke with like accountants and things like lawyers and accountants. They don't, well, lawyers, not so much, more so accountants that they're not always in the creative arts.
I mean, I don't really get that too much, although I definitely understand the vibes
mm-hmm.
because the accountants that I've met are lovely people.
Yeah, sure.
And they're very professional.
Mm-hmm.
They're very corporate mm-hmm. and they do dress up every time I see them because it's usually in a work work setting. Mm-hmm. But the kind of person that you need to be an accountant is very analytical, very detail oriented, Mm-hmm. And someone who is efficient and is willing to see things through to the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And I say that in order to be a successful artist, you also need to be all of those things.
I love that.
Like,
you're right.
Maybe not analytical, but I do feel like in order to improve at your craft, you do need to analyze what you're doing.
That's right.
And every detail counts. Like, you can be good at the basics, and I do actually stress everybody, please be good at the basics, yeah. But it's what you tack onto the basics, all those little tricks that you learn, all yeah. those little things that you start to look out for. I think that those translate into the arts very well. It's just the application is very different. One is you're trying to stay in compliance as in an auditor, or you're looking for ways to reduce someone's taxable income, or you're trying to keep the books for a company, and there is a right way to do it. Although there's more judgment calls with that than people say. It's not an exact science. It's all like a lot of judgment calls, and
oh, yeah.
you need to train your judgment in order to be an accountant. But
especially interpreting that tax law and tax code.
I mean, there's more to that than tax.
For sure.
But for
businesses, trust me, like that's important.
But for the arts, there's just this inherent creativity to it. And I feel like that really kind of takes what I'm good at with accounting, but it grasps my humanity. And I'm allowed to paint my own picture using the qualities that make me good as an accountant.
Love that.
That's amazing. And, you know, I just wanted to say real quick before we forget that you are the artist who created the intro music for Talking Transparency.
Yeah.
I want to make sure
yeah.
we give you a shout out here. We didn't give you the proper roses as you came in the door.
I clarified that I didn't want my real name to be used with that track because I wanted my artist name to be used for that track.
Yes.
I separate my two careers, and the people sure. in the accounting field know me as Sabrina Scarlett, but the people in the music field know me as SKS.
Yes.
My close friends know me as Sabrina.
Okay.
But those are my friend. Those are my homie.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're allowed to know me by my name.
Okay.
And I feel like if I do ever get big enough for it, then yeah, I'm probably just going to have my name out there. But mm-hmm. I keep my professions separate mm-hmm. by and large.
I hope I didn't do a faux pas by like, you know, you're here as yourself, you know, but I want to make sure that people know because they like heard some really good beats mm-hmm. and music that you produced. And I feel like when you talk about all this creativity and all the different ways, like I could see you becoming a sound engineer. Like I could see you becoming, because the analytical skills you talk about mixed with the creativity, and like it's such a dynamic usage when you just like start making different sounds and then building on top of those. I mean,
I think that's the biggest aspect of my work of making music is the engineering side of it. That's the biggest aspect because in the beginning, there's the writing and the production portion where I'm in there and I'm writing the melodies and I'm picking the sounds, I'm designing the sounds, and I'm playing my guitar, I'm recording it, and I'm putting it where it needs to go. But while I'm doing that, I'm also fine-tuning parts of the mix itself, and I'm fine-tuning how that's going to play into it. But then the last portion that takes me usually under an hour... Mm-hmm. That's when I really had to hone in on that engineering portion, and I had to really like see it through to the end and the mix and the master. Mm-hmm. So it's I think it's the biggest portion of me making music, and I made so much of it now that it feels kind of repetitive for me to just like, okay, I gotta make sure I hit these metrics now, but seeing the vision that I had from that moment I started writing come to fruition in a way where it can sound good on big speakers makes it all worth it to me.
I love that for you.
And I think we were talking before the show. Do you have some performance coming up here? Was it Charleston?
Yeah, I'm going to Charleston on February 3rd at a venue called the Purple Buffalo.
Ooh.
It's going to be the doors are going to open at 6 p.m. I'm going to just say I do not know which stage I'm going to play on because there's two stages. And I also don't know what time I'm going to be on. So you just have to be there from the start to the finish to see me.
Gotcha.
And you have traveled. Have you traveled before for shows?
Yes. I have not traveled that far. I think the furthest I went up was up to Woodbridge in Northern Virginia for that art gallery that I was headlining. Mm-hmm. And it was not a big crowd. I really promoted the heck out of it, mm-hmm. but it wasn't a huge crowd. It was like 15 people max, maybe 20 people,
mm-hmm.
but
gives you good experience though, right?
Oh, the energy was crazy. Because I got up on the decks and there were like three DJs who went prior to me. There was Bad Taste, there was Godless, and there was Neo Destiny. So Bad Taste makes like Jersey and hardcore. Mm-hmm. And it's trying to get more into like bass music as well, but it's mainly just the hardcore, hard dance type of music. Mm-hmm. And then Neo Destiny does trance music, just kind of stayed in that area. Godless did techno, and then I came on and I did house music. Mm-hmm. Mainly, but I mixed it up. I have a hard style song that I played, and I also ended on dubstep note. Nice. And when I say like, you know, I play like house, a lot of people will assume that's just like, oh, it's just tech house. I kind of stray pretty far away from tech house where I will play it, but that will be like maybe 5 to 6% of the set. Mm-hmm. And the rest is just going to be bangers after bangers, and mm-hmm. then bring it back with the pop-y sort of like progressive house tune style that you heard a lot in the mid 2010s.
Oh my gosh. Look, I need to tell y'all a story. My husband and I went to Bass Lights, which was Bass Nectar and Pretty Lights.
Oh, don't talk about Bass Nectar.
This is a show. So we just went to the show, and we went up to the like nosebleed area of the Coliseum because we're old people and we are not raving. But we're here to see, you know, we were there really for Pretty Lights. And I have listened to Bass Nectar, but we were there. Our friends worked with Pretty Lights. So we went to go see. And I'm walking up to, you know, just here to concert. And you walk up to the concession stand and we grabbed a couple, you know, we're getting two beers. And there was no line. And when we walked up, the guy kind of giggled at us and was like, hey, what can I get you? And the giggle was kind of like, what are you doing here? I was like, oh, I mean, I guess we're like, this guy's even acknowledging like we're old people at this show.
I feel like I would be an old person at this show though too.
I feel like you might be too. Yeah. So we purposely like sat up like in the high seats. And I noticed the line, but when I was standing there at the counter ordering beer, I was like, why is the line for the water fountain so busy, right?
I can tell you the good reason why.
Right, right. So rave shows. I learned a lot, like, about, this was my first, like, actual, like, what I would consider to be a dubstep or a, like, a techno type of show. Or not techno, no.
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 I know who the artist you're talking about is, and I feel uncomfortable saying their name.
Oh, is that? Yeah.
Because they've done some heinous things.
Have they? Yeah, yeah. I don't know any of that. I just went.
I'm not going to mention what.
Yeah, no, don't mention any of that. But I just went to the show and went, oh my gosh, am I too old for these concerts
now?
No,
you're not.
I felt like I was.
There is a wonderful woman who friended me on Facebook, and she is always at Peabody's. I think. Yeah. And she's always kind of like in the front to the right from the stage. Like if you're the DJ and you're looking out off to the right, first table up, you'll see her and her husband. And they're people who have gray skin, gray hair.
Yeah.
And
big buggy eyes.
and they are on the older side where I think they're retired and they play bingo and stuff They're such lovely people.
What about them made you think that they play bingo?
Because she told me.
Oh, that's old. Like, if you go around bragging about bingo, you're either like really good at bingo or really old.
Again, we were talking about Lexis, the girl who.
Oh, okay.
We were talking about Lexis, and she saw my Facebook post about her and what happened to her, and then she said she was at bingo, and they prayed for her. Yeah, so that's how I know she does that. But I'm just trying to give you a sense of the age we're talking about here.
Yes.
Yeah, she's there. She was there for the open deck that I played at Peabody's.
Yeah.
And she friended me on Facebook, and she interacts with my stuff. And I told her to follow my page because I got tons of announcements coming up. Yeah. And she's like, absolutely, we'll do. And like, it just goes to show you're never too old to go to a concert. You're never too old to have fun.
Yeah. No, I'm never too old to have fun. I just was like, everybody was amazing.
It's not like age, you know, obviously age exists, but I think that age isn't as big a factor in being at an event like a concert as one would think. Mm-hmm. Just like, oh, I'm probably too old for this. You're never too old to do anything.
Where I learned
for pushing back.
I know. Thanks for pushing back on that. That's where I learned about totems. I was like, oh my gosh, why are those are cool. Like, why are they carrying those like dolls on sticks? And my husband's like, those are totems, honey, so they can find each other. I was like, ooh. That's brilliant. That's so.
What would your totem be if you had a totem?
I don't know. I have to think about what would your totem be?
Okay. You know what? That's not fair. That's not fair. I'm just sitting there.
I can't even think. I would have peacock.
Peacock.
I love that for you.
Yeah. What about you, Miss Sabrina? What about you?
I don't know anything about totems. So.
Yeah. Silly goose, for sure. You have a goose, for sure.
Rodney could be your... Rodney over there, your silly goose could definitely be your on your totem.
Not yes, pictured.
Silly goose. I just came up with a name.
I might dip into my childhood and do a Care Bear.
Okay. Which Care Bear? Do we have a specific Care Bear?
No, just the Care Bears.
I mean, just the Care Bears. I mean, any of them. I loved them. Oh, I could do a Strawberry Shortcake doll if I'm really digging in there.
Yeah, gotta hit me with Dragon Tails.
Oh, Dragon Tails. Oh,
what about those troll dolls? Do you remember those? Oh, those were huge in the 80s and 90s.
Well, if we're really going to get into it, then I can go straight to Cabbage Patch. Literally, I had one of, I mean, my only childhood memory of like, I have to have this Christmas gift. Santa has to bring this to me. Well, I mean, I knew by that age there wasn't Santa.
We don't care. Santa's real now.
Did not mean to spoil that for Sabrina. She's over there like, please don't. The shine in your eyes right now.
Yes. Yeah, so it was a Cabbage Patch doll. And I just remembered how I felt when I opened my Cabbage Patch doll. But I did have a great time at that concert, by the way. I just went, the vibe was so amazing and everybody was so wonderful at that show. And I totally would absolutely, I mean, I'll go to pretty much any show. I will, aside from Screamo, like metal type stuff, I'm not interested.
I'll go to a metal show because metal shows are so hype.
It's too much stimulation for me.
Granted, then you probably wouldn't like modern dubstep, modern bass music because that is just, it's basically slow break electronic metal music. It's very headbangy. Just like, boom.
If there's bass, though, I'm good with bass. It's the harsh.
That's what I'm saying.
Is that what they've kind of, the modern stuff is the kind of turn?
Yeah, it is. The bass is obviously there, but they really are pushing it with how hard they're pushing the high end. Like, super heavy distortion. And my friend launched six. I was talking to him over at Guitar Center. And he described as like, yeah, I make tinnitus.
Yeah, he probably does make tinnitus. Yeah,
he makes good tinnitus. But I no shade on him. Like, I love that guy so much. He's a homie. But when it comes to the stuff that he makes, like super heavy tear out dubstep or even like rhythm, which became popular a couple of years ago, and it's really big in this area now. Oh. It's just.
Let me ask you, as a trans woman, do you feel supported in the community? Like, as a musician, do you have is there a community for trans people in your world?
I feel like I've never gotten anything other than respect for my ability as a musician, as a DJ, and as just a nice person.
Yes.
There was a guy who came up to me while I was over at Seaside, and I like, the only reason I mentioned Launch Six is because that's his artist name, but I don't want to mention like real names I'm on the camera. But he came up to me and he said, hey, I see you a lot at shows, and you're just, your vibe is just, you always bring such good vibes. What's your name and what are your pronouns?
Great.
So I said, I'm Sabrina. I go by she, her. And he's like, oh yeah, awesome. I go by he, they. So perfect. It's like not something I would have even guessed, but at the same time, I don't make those kind of guesses.
You don't make those assumptions, right?
I don't make those guesses, but mm-hmm. I just feel like people like him are welcome. I feel welcome in these spaces. I have tons of friends and I show them my music. And they don't really comment to me about the fact that I'm trans.
Of course.
They comment about my music. And that's really the most amount of support that I really ask for. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm going to be an artist, I want you to appreciate me as an artist, mm-hmm. first and foremost. Because I have, like, the other career I'm doing with accounting, and I'm involved in the trans community mm-hmm. here locally. But I'm here for the music, and people don't really take it further than that. And that's what I would like.
Perfect.
It's the same as if I was a cis woman.
That's right.
If I was a cis woman doing the same thing I'd be doing, I feel like I just wouldn't be treated any differently.
That is right. But the unfortunate thing is that we know that not everybody treats trans people with the same respect.
It's so unfortunate too. I was talking to Hexa back when she was here. She's in like Philadelphia, mm-hmm. but she was here for a show playing right before Launch Six, who played direct support for Hades back in August. And when I was talking to her and I told her that I was an artist and I make house music, she said, we need more trans representation in the EDM sphere. We need more trans artists.
It's interesting that you say that because I remember reading an article, and I just pulled it up here, about Wendy Carlos. Was apparently the International Transgender Day of Visibility honored her because she was a pioneer in electronic music and actually was,
Are you talking about the same person who did the classical songs but with synthesizers in the 70s?
Yes.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was a visionary and pioneered a lot of the electronic music and things in the 80s and even helped invent some of the technology and synthesizers and things that have become standardized.
She's a legend, and she absolutely does deserve the recognition because she pushed music itself forward with her vision of playing classical records but on a synthesizer way back in the 70s. Nowadays we do it all in the box. We have computers and we have software that does stuff that's admittedly far more complicated than what she was working with, but at the time it was the first of its kind sort of success for electronic music.
Very cool.
Like, she was trying to pitch it to distribution companies and they didn't take it because they didn't like the idea. So she just put it out and people ended up just eating it up, and she ended up becoming a major success.
And you see, this is the thing. I would imagine that not every music industry, not every niche, not every social group, not every different genre, if you will, depending on how you want to, or even like scenes, you know, of different genres would be as accepting of trans folks. But I imagine things like the punk scene, like the electronic scene, because of so many badass trans women who have like led the way in those scenes. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that you aren't a badass trans woman leading in the scene, because you are Miss Sabrina. I'm just saying, you know, I think that when I think about like places that would be approachable, more approachable for me, or even people that might be listening, like sometimes we might think that's not our scene, but it's a scene that, you know, a lot of people are more open-minded, I guess, or we'd like to believe they're more open-minded. And if they aren't, you know, they're kind of disrespecting the roots of the whole scene, you know?
Agreed. I mean, I don't really think about the roots because I don't really think about the past.
Okay.
Even today with my own life, I will reminisce on the past and I'll remember things, but I won't let the past be as big a decision maker as much as where I'm trying to go. And that's why that's something I had to learn, how to get out of the sunk cost fallacy for certain things. Like, I've already invested so much, but how is that going to help me moving forward?
Yeah, I guess I'm speaking more to the apprehension that I know a lot of different trans folks, especially baby trans folks, people who have recently come out or are not, they're even questioning maybe, you know, finding those spaces or those sorts of spaces. I'm just thinking to myself, you should go to a Sabrina Scarlett concert. You should go check out the scene here in Hampton. You should go check out.
Go to an SKS concert.
There we go. Thank you, babe. Let's get it right.
It's just my initials, by the way. My first, middle, and last initial. That's what that is. It's not anything special. So I still do promote myself. It's just my initials are my artist tag. Mm-hmm. But going back to that sunk cost fallacy, it's can you please continue your point?
Oh, I just was just saying that, you know, like I said, it's nice to think that we have people in the scene, because I know, like, we have musicians who are, like, trans women who are punk rockers locally. We have lots of different musicians and different, and to me, when I see that representation, not just at the national level, not just at the historical level, like you said, back in time, but actually people out there performing locally, it makes me feel more welcome. And I don't know if that's necessarily an aspect of, or it's just the cherry on top of what you're doing, because like you said, you lead with the creativity in that music and who you are, which is beautiful and wonderful.
I think that's how everybody should do it, if they're going to be in a creative space. Like, we were talking about this, but I'm going to take it a bit of a different direction. We were talking about how the music is just the legs that your career stands on, but the heart and the soul and the brain and the mind and everything that people come at to actually see is you as the artist, as the person. And I do think that the music and the art itself is indicative of you, of who you are, what your creation is, that's your humanity that you are putting out for display for everybody to see and experience. Like, when people listen to my songs, they are listening to me.
Right. In with artists, it is their full expression. Like with my husband, he always says, "That's not your tattoo. That's my tattoo. You're just wearing it for me." With musicians, you know, you put that music out, you invoke these emotions in people, right?
And I think the fact that it invokes such emotions in people allows people to co-opt it and make it part of themselves, too. Mm-hmm. Sure. Like, you said your husband is the one who did the
My husband is a tattoo artist.
When your husband says that, mm-hmm. I do agree that is his art.
Yeah, sure.
But it's art that's meant for you.
Oh, 100%.
You asked for the image, you commissioned it, and you wanted it done a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So I genuinely think that it's not just the artist's art at a certain point.
It becomes for that person.
It becomes for the person who is listening to it.
Yes. And that's a philosophical question, too. It's like, if a tree falls in the forest, does anybody hear it? You know, if a musician performs alone in the middle of a forest, is it art?
I do believe it's art.
You know, yes. I mean, yes. One could say that it's art, but I feel like, is it the same art? Is it as full as not having an audience and not being listened? Because it's that other side of that appreciation that I think gives, not that it's lacking, not to say it's lacking, but gives more texture. Mm-hmm. It's not a lack. It's an abundance.
I do agree with that, but I think that it can still be art even without it.
That's fair.
Because I think that art at the end of the day is just, it's humanity expressing itself, people expressing themselves to other people. I think that's what is truly the essence of art. And then people take the stuff that they like, they relate to a story, or the song carries them through a bad time. Or they just see an image and they see something in it, or they feel something from it. Sure. And it becomes part of their expression. Mm-hmm. So I do think that there is an element of human interaction mm-hmm. with art. But I think that's part of the fact that art is an expression of humanity.
I would agree. I mean, I would definitely agree with that. And music is something that, like, evokes a lot of emotion in people.
It does. Mm-hmm. I think that it's the way that the industry has gone has definitely tapered that down with the way that people are expected to make songs. Like, I just made a track right before I got here. I finished it like 40 minutes before I got here, and I put it on my USB and then I drove here. Mm-hmm. But I had a shortened version. Like, the track is 3 minutes long, but I made a shortened version that's a minute and a half, and it just has the intro, the buildup, and the first drop, and it's done. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the way that the industry has gone with the algorithms and the way that people now experience music, with Spotify being the curator.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because the way it works now is...
See, like, I don't even barely use Spotify. So
You have to stay away from the skip button, and you have to worry about your streams. It's not like it used to be, where you used to go to a record store, pay $15 to $20 to buy a vinyl. Right. And the vinyl had a set amount of time that it allowed for an album to be on. So albums kind of formatted to be fit into like however long the album was. Mm-hmm. 12 to 15 tracks or probably something
right,
like that.
Right, something like that, yeah.
So nowadays, it's all about streaming numbers. You get paid every time someone listens to your music.
Until the internet crashes, y'all.
So
that's up now.
So if you have a really, really catchy song, mm-hmm. but it's a really short song, when people want more, they need to replay it.
Mm-hmm.
And that right there, that's another stream.
Right.
Oh, wow. So like the commodification, it's becoming like the actual experience of the art and the they aren't thinking about, okay, I want to set up a whole concert or I want to set up a listening experience, like you're saying, with a whole album. They're saying, I want to set up these fast over and over and over and over again plugs that give me those that payout.
Capitalism. That's, capitalism going to capitalize. Yeah,
and then,
wow, I haven't even considered that.
And then the start of the song, the way you start a song is so important because you can't have these long, drawn-out intros unless if it's a really niche audience.
Amen.
That loves it.
Listen.
You need to have...
Catch me early.
I start out with that. I start with the vision of the song that I have, and I save that as the extended mix that I play in concerts because I'm not really bound to those restrictions in concerts. I can play the full track how I envisioned it. But when I put it out on the internet, I really try to think, I need the hook right now, and I need it to be as short as I can get it so that if people like it and they think it's catchy, they can just rewind and replay it, and that's another stream.
So I want to change the subject just a little bit because I'm loving this and I love talking about the music, but I'm curious a little bit, about, your background and your future. You know, the podcast, we oftentimes bring people on and parents on and we talk about families. And one of the things I like to discuss is like, what does the trans family mean to you? And how do you, what are your goals beyond music? You know what I mean? Like, you want to travel somewhere? Do you want to, what is it? I know we talked a little bit about public accounting, but lay it out, babe.
I mean, it's not just public accounting. It's, just accounting in general. I know I said like, that's going to be that's my profession. I consider it my profession, even though it's I'm still a student. It's my profession. It's my career. And I treat it seriously like that. And it's just wherever it takes me because the world's always changing. But when you're talking about family and you're talking about the trans family, I don't look at trans people any differently than I look at cis people. So I look at everybody who I come into contact with and I vibe with as part of my family. It doesn't matter to me if you're cis or if you're trans.
It doesn't matter to me either, but mm-hmm. there matters to a lot of people, like the folks that want to make laws that govern our lives and a lot of times what our taxes are.
I think that's a potent difference because to me it's just so simple. It's just so simple. If I think you're a cool person, then you're a cool person. But a lot of people don't really see us that way. And they see us as this other, this obscene sort of person. And they want to legislate us specifically about our medical care, our ability to go to the bathroom, and our want to play sports, and among other things. And I think that's just so sad. Honestly, it's just so sad and so depressing. And it does worry me a lot that there are people out there who think like that and who make decisions for us when they don't even know what they're doing. They don't know what they're talking about. They have the scientists testify in front of the board meetings, in front of the legislatures themselves, and they give the evidence. They speak their truths and their experiences with patients who are trans, and then the legislatures, they don't care. Mm-hmm. They vote the exact opposite way that the experts are urging them, and also the people who it actually affects mm-hmm. are urging them to go. They're going in the exact wrong direction. Who's hurt by a trans person just existing? You can say that a trans person hurt you because of what they did to you, but you can't say that all trans people hurt you just because they're there.
Correct. Yes.
It's all down to the individual.
Mm. But you're talking about ideology versus like pragmatism, right?
Yes.
Or facts and all those things. And I think that's where the intersectionality of like religion, and science and ideology, all of these things kind of are all layered in it, and it's not, and it's simple to you, but as Thea is saying, they make it not simple because it's rooted in a specific ideology.
But regardless of who makes it simple or not simple, yeah. I appreciate the yeah, perspective absolutely. That you have, because I think that that is the correct perspective.
It is simple.
It is very simple. Yes. But I also think that, you know, getting at the heart of it more, drilling down, is like, you know, what does the trans family mean to you? Because for me, we talk about these issues and you talk about the evidence, you talk about sports, we talk about hormones, we talk about surgeries, we talk about children, we talk about all these things that are politicized right now that are like button issues. But then beyond that, there's this big one, you know, and it's been persistent for a while and we still haven't got clarity on it, even here in Virginia, which is about adoption. Trans folks being able to literally have families, being able to be a full-fledged member of society and have a future and build a life for ourselves that includes the careers and families. And we can have pieces and parts of it, but maybe not all of it. And that's the thing that scares me when I look at this stuff more than anything.
Yeah. Adoption is a particularly sensitive one for me, because Thea, you know that I want to be a mom.
Yes.
I want to have a family. I want to raise a kid to grow up into this world and live their life that I have that motherly instinct about mm-hmm. me, and I can't have kids. I did have a surgery, and I also have been on HRT for over a year. It's approaching a year and a half within this next coming month. Mm-hmm. So I'm completely infertile, and if I was to have a kid, I'd only have two options, which would be to date into a family mm-hmm. or to adopt. Mm-hmm. And particularly with adoption, I've heard people who have families, they say, oh, it's not the end of the world. You can adopt. Well, a lot of adoption organizations are very religious in nature, and they will turn down gay families because it goes against their values as an organization, their Christian values as an organization.
Well, I mean, are you able now in Virginia as a gay couple to adopt as a gay couple?
I think that's possible. And even trans people can adopt. And so
I only asked because I helped facilitate an adoption with a gay couple years ago. Oh my gosh, it's probably 20 years ago out of Chicago. But the one of the partners, for me, they were the parents. They were adopting this child. But Virginia only allowed one of them to adopt the child.
So that was before 2014, though.
So that would have been before 2014.
Yeah. Speaking of the United States federal government.
Yeah, so that would have been before 2014. Yeah, absolutely. This was in 2000. Maybe 2006.
Gay marriage clarified a lot of these things, because like when you talk about spousal rights mm-hmm. and marriage rights, but I think one of the issues there is that it wasn't a lot of clarity back in 2014 on trans issues in this. Because let's say the two conditions, we talk about adoption, let's set that on the shelf for a second, yeah. and let's talk about marrying into a family. Mm-hmm. If we are legally defined as obscene, Ms. Sabrina, how are we going to be able to marry into a family, because just our very presence is going to be politicized, or we could be, you know, it's child abuse if we're in this child's life, period. And I don't think a lot of times the policymakers who come up with this stuff, or the people that push this stuff, really think about how absolutely harsh and cruel that is for people like us who are just trying to live our lives, and we have the same right.
So it's so sad to me, because it does completely destroy our ability to have a family. Should we want to have a family? Yes. And I firmly believe that everybody should have the right to start a family if Absolutely. They think they are up to the task of parenting. Mm-hmm. If they can raise a child and they want to raise a child, they should be able to start that family, set that child up for success, and then let them carry on the torch into the next generation. Yep. I firmly right. believe that it should be accessible to everyone, no matter who you are. But if we have laws that pass that label us as obscene, we're not allowed to be within X amount of feet from a school. We're not allowed to be around children, period. As a matter of fact, we were just talking about this, but in West Virginia, there's a bill that was filed to label trans people as obscene and keep us away up to 25 feet from a school. 2,500 feet. But a registered sex offender is allowed to be within, no, is allowed to be up to 1,000 feet. There's a 1,500 foot difference there in how close we can be to kids versus a registered sex offender.
Literally pure ignorance.
But it's like, it's beyond ignorance. This is malice.
It is malice. It is.
Because when we talk about genocide,
they are trying to legally categorize us as worse than convicted sex offenders.
I want the listeners to really stop and think about this. Yeah. Just for the nature of us talking right now, there are people that think that we should be thrown in jail, that we shouldn't be allowed to have families, that we should be criminal
camps. I mean,
or firing squads. I've heard that from politicians.
I mean, this is legitimately wants to put people in internment camps, homeless people, and then who else do you think? I'm telling you, it's LGBTQ plus people.
Oh, and they're also pretty racist too. So.
Oh, they're very racist. Yes.
So yes. Let's. Yeah. I mean, like, if you like Trump's entire Trump, not Trump's. I mean, I don't want to sound like people will come on me, but a huge portion of Trump's campaign in 2016 was about Mexicans.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He's so racist. I mean, I can go on and I don't even want to talk about him, but yes, and so the legislators are trying to pass bills like this. And when you have super majorities like you have in Ohio, even a governor can't, even a Republican governor who wants to veto something can't even do that because super majorities then overwrite those laws overwrite those vetoes so that those laws then go into effect.
Well, you know my feelings on that. I think you're being very generous to DeWine in that particular context.
100%.
I think you knew it was coming down the pipeline.
100%. But we have it's not just Ohio. Like Tennessee is another one. I mean,
Missouri, Florida, Texas.
Texas, yep.
I think Alabama, Oklahoma are also up there. Louisiana is really trying to push it as well.
Yeah, Iowa. So we have all these Utah. Laws. Yep, we've got all these laws. I mean, in Virginia, right now we're safe.
No, we're not.
Hold on. We are from right at this moment. We are in session. There are no laws passing this year that will have a consequential effect to gender affirming care because we may have a Republican governor, but we now have control of legislature and we've got 6 weeks and we know that there's a protection there for this year.
What's the margin?
It is, I want to say
two in the Senate.
It's two in the Senate and it might be five in the House. I'd have to
look. Okay. That's a decent bulk war. Cause I know last year we had the one senator holding back, they were trying to get around it.
Well, we had last year, Democrats had the Senate and the Republicans had the House for the last 2 years, not just last year. It was last 2 years.
Yeah.
So now we have Senate and we have House. So at least we have we know that they can't do anything because beyond what we have right now with the support, and there's enough support, right, to keep those terrible laws coming out. So that's what when I say like we're safe in that aspect because we've got the next 6 weeks. We're not getting any bills passed that are going to be detrimental to trans people.
But Melissa, and you might know this better than I possibly could know, is there anybody in the Democratic House or Senate who might end up being like that lady from North Carolina who switched parties?
No.
We don't have any loose leaky notes?
We do not.
Excellent. So we're good.
Yeah, no. Out of the 40 senators and the 100 delegates, we do not have it. Do we have center rightish leaning Democrats? We do. But they're not going to go against the caucus, the actual caucus. The only person we had that he's out now, he got voted out, was Joe Morrissey in Richmond, who was, I mean, he was full on like anti-abortion as example. And he was a Democrat. And so he was going to vote with Republicans. Now we had the Senate to stop it. So, but now with this new election, 33% of our House are new members. We had a big turnover in legislature in Virginia. And we're looking to get more gains. We have like a slim margin, but if we can get more gains, we can protect more rights, right?
It scares me so much because I worry about the idea of a Republican getting elected for the presidency. if the Republicans get a majority in the Senate and the House of Representatives, but Democrats in the presidency, then the Republicans are never going to have the sway that they do in states like Ohio and at the national level.
100%. Yeah, on a federal. I'm just speaking like right now just on the state level. So for like us, but you're 100% right.
But if
a Republican takes
the presidency and the Democrats take the Senate and the House of Representatives, I am legitimately scared because presidents have been flexing their muscles with executive power way too much.
I mean, sure. I mean, EOs, but EOs aren't laws. So executive orders aren't laws. So we like there are fail safes there. We're coming to a point right now where from a legislative standpoint in this country, you're going to have safe states and you're going to have not safe states. I mean, that's really what we have right now.
Yeah.
Right. And we need more. 2024 is going to be a huge year. We need people engaged. That's right.
We need people voting. We need people donating to campaigns so that mm-hmm. we can get more people voting.
Yes.
And we need people to be out. We need people mm-hmm. to actually be on the trail and advocating for not just their rights, but the rights of their friends and their family members.
But that's why I do what I do. I mean, I speak at school boards all the time. I'll be in Richmond twice this week just to be at the General Assembly to advocate, right, to these legislators. And that is what is – that's the work that has to be done.
Absolutely.
And it's not – like, I'm a cisgendered white woman. I understand my privilege, and I have to use it. And the only practical way I feel like I can use it right now is to – stay on top of our school boards, our city council members, our state legislators, our congress people on a national level, like on a federal level, right? That's all I can do.
Sabrina, are you coming with the STRC and Kalos and the other organizations? There's a trans-led organization going up in February to the Equality Virginia Summit.
I actually put it in my calendar, but I never got anything from Zavaria.
Okay. I'll follow up, make sure we send stuff. If you want to come, you know, we'll have the bus. And if anyone's listening, if you're in the Hampton Roads area,
you can reach out
directly to the contact at Kalos. I'll be happy to forward you the information. Reach out to the STFC.
I wrote it down. I don't have anything written for next month because I write everything down on a month by month basis, but I write down little events, like little footnotes, like, okay, next month on this day, this is what's going to go on. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the month, I'm going to write down what's going to go on in February.
Listen, a lobby day at the General Assembly. There are people everywhere there. Every day is basically a lobby day right now. There's always different organizations. But lobby days are fun. Have you been to a lobby day?
I haven't.
No.
This will be my first lobby day.
Well, I shouldn't say it's fun. It's fun because you're able to kind of see all the formalities of what's going on. And then you actually have an opportunity because you're in their face and they can't shoo you away. Right. You're there lobbying and they know you're coming and it's full of intent. So I would really encourage anybody, if you have a cause, especially like with Equality Virginia, like look into contact Kalos Coalition, take a day, go up and see what's going on in the General Assembly.
I want to bring the conversation back to, we were talking about family
mm-hmm.
and how, like what I think about like the trans family
mm-hmm.
and also it kind of segued into the fact that I personally do want to have a family.
Be a mom. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Family is just a really important aspect of my life.
Well, how many kids do you want?
Good question.
How many can you afford?
Better question.
Right. Ideally, in a world where money was not an object.
Oh, and time and energy.
How many children would you ideally like to have?
I mean, probably at least two, because I don't want an only child.
I'm an only child.
But
I'm not saying anything.
You're not an only child, are you?
But no, I would no comment.
So yeah, so two is a nice good number.
I said at least. I didn't say
yeah.
Definitively. But I think after after one of my relationships happened, there was a situation where let me put it this way. She was fresh off of her last relationship with someone who was pregnant.
Okay.
And while I was with her, she asked me things like if I wanted to have my own children. And she's like, I want to have children with you. And we talked up, we got like little supplies for the baby, and I was like really preparing, like, oh, this is really it. I'm going to be like a little stepmom now.
Yeah.
And then,
bonus. We like to say bonus.
That's like the situation that I was going into. And I started to really feel like, oh, I could like have a family now. Yeah. This is great. And,
you could envision it.
And then, you know, she left cause she didn't want to pay child support. It's a whole complicated mess there.
Yeah.
But when I got word that the baby was born, and I never met the baby in my life, but I just felt such an intense, like, love. Like, I've been waiting for this baby to come out, and, like, I would kill for that baby. Mm-hmm. Like, this sort of thing where it's just, like, I know it's not my baby. I know I'm not mom, but I just had this sort of motherly instinct, little nurturing nature that's just been sort of not unlocked. I always had it, but it's just really brought to the forefront. And I think from that moment forward, I started thinking about things like how a kid develops. And I got the little textbook from the American Academy of Pediatrics of raising a kid from the womb until age 5.
Oh, cool.
And I was reading it, and I started to...
It's more than most people do when they want to have a family, right?
And I was just thinking, and I was just constantly thinking about motherhood and, you know, how I just, you know, I wanted to be in positions where I could like babysit or take care of other people's kids, not for them, but like to help me get more comfortable around kids. And get used to the motions of taking care of kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it just like, I think from that moment forward, that was around the same time I got my surgery, which was an orchiectomy. I'm not going to elaborate on that further, but mm-hmm. I lost my ability to have my own children.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like promised with being a stepmom, and that was taken away from me. But I just, those two combined was just like a perfect force of just, I really, really, really feel it. Like right. I need to be a parent.
That's great.
Like, not like I want to be a parent, but like I feel it in my soul. Like, I need to be a parent. Like, well, that's who I am.
That relationship probably let you visualize that for yourself. And I would say for you, like, have you visualized yourself with the family?
Absolutely.
Yes. And that, so
that's
first,
a big thing.
Right. The first step
of
like,
it was one of the things that helped me even know that I wanted to transition, because I didn't transition until I was 30 years old. And I always knew who I was, but it was a sort of thing that I have to do this. Could I get, because there's lots of consequences and costs, and especially back in the 90s, but I digress. Yeah. I know that, you know, I couldn't picture a future. I couldn't picture myself being happy. I couldn't picture, like, there was no, that dead name, that dead person, was no future image. But when I did, like, those images of having kids and then also having a successful career and being able to see myself happy or in any sort of relationship is always seeing myself as myself.
Yeah, you know. And then when you can, like, I feel like when you can visualize that for yourself and you start to like imagine like what your life looks like with a family, then you start to have those, it like enhances the feelings, right?
Yeah,
those feelings of like of joy when you look at children, and then you then start going, oh my gosh, this can happen to me, like I can do this.
I wasn't doing that with just children in general, but when I got my hands on some of the pictures of the baby, I did have that feeling of just like,
that's what you can hold, snuggle that baby, take care of that baby.
That's real.
They can, like, keep you up all night.
They were both at my, house, and they let me put my hand on the stomach, and I could feel little kicks.
Mm-hmm.
That she was just like poking out with her feet, and she was kicking up on my hand, and I think I fell in love at that moment.
It's magical and alien.
Mm.
It's like alien.
as soon as I felt that kick, I just fell in love.
Yeah, it's very magical.
It really is. It's just it's something that you can't really replicate with anything else.
Miss Sabrina, can I just say, I think you're going to make an amazing mother someday.
I agree.
I mean, if I can adopt, I would love to. But that's like, I almost became a foster parent, but then my dad talked me out of it, saying, you need to get your degree. You need to focus on your degree. You need to focus on making money so that you can actually take care of the child. And I'm like, Dad, you're right.
I was going to say, Dad is right. Dad is right.
It makes me sad, but he is right.
Life is long until it's not. And you have a long, long life ahead of you, babe.
Yes, very much so.
But it did kind of become unhealthy for me in a way, because I started to do a lot of things, not for myself, but because I wanted to be a good mom. And I wanted to be a good example for how a person should be in this world. I wanted to set myself up in a way that set an example for a child to watch.
Right.
So I started getting back into athletics and swimming and rock climbing and just things I enjoyed doing, but athletics. I started really digging myself deep into the arts and cooking and reading and just going out and being with friends. And I kind of threw myself into my schoolwork, and I did all of this thinking that none of this was really for me. It's because I wanted to be someone who someone can look at and say, I want to be like this person. Mm-hmm. And particularly with a child, the parent is the first point of contact. Mm-hmm. And what the parent does, what the parent exposes to the kid, what's exposed to the kid in those formative years, that's all the kid knows about the world.
That's right.
So I take that very, very seriously, of just like, I really want to set the right example the first time.
Well, yes, we all make mistakes, though.
We do. And I think that's part of the human experience, is the fact that you make mistakes. And I'm not afraid to show that to the kid. I'm not going to beat myself up for it, but I want to at least try.
Right. Right. Well, we like having the intention of wanting to be that, but nobody gives us a manual. Right. So I always say be kind to yourself,
That's the mindset I used to have. I don't really think that way much anymore, because now I've kind of evolved from there to the point where I'm just like, I really like being a good person.
Yes. Well, I mean,
it evolved from there to being a part of who I actually am. And now it's much easier for me to be that way.
Well, because now you're authentically you.
I've always been that way.
Well, yes, but you are. Wouldn't you say you're feeling more authentically you as you, I guess we didn't ask this. What age did you transition?
I came out in an official capacity at around 20 years old. Yeah, September 16th, 2019. Okay. That was my hatch day.
Your hatch day?
Yeah, I came out as trans to me. I figured that out. Yeah. But I started to medically transition and legally transition in 2022.
In 2022?
So I was about 22.
Are you a 2000 baby?
I'm 99.
You're 99? Okay.
So I'm not going to say I'm a 2000s baby, because I was born in the century of 19 something.
Oh, that's right.
I don't
it's
care if
fantastic. It's fantastic. Your entire life now, you can be like, you can party like it's 1999. Literally. It's fantastic.
Yes, exactly. Like you were born, the year you were born. My youngest is actually a 2000s baby, so it's really easy. I'll always know how old she is. Yes. It's so much easier, right?
Oh, you came up in the time of chia pets.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Easy bake ovens.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Easy bake ovens for sure. I mean, I was born in the 70s, so I came up at a time of all kinds of things, but yes.
I mean, I still remember Neopets.
Oh, Neopets. I remember because my oldest is your age, about to be 30. They'll be 30. So
I'm old, y'all.
You just aren't you 31?
33.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, you're not old. I mean, I'm not really old either. Some days my body feels old. My mind feels so young.
I don't really let... I've stopped categorizing it as young and old. Because mm-hmm. the end of the day, age can tell very little about a person at the end of the day. Obviously, like, you know, there's age of consent and you can't... And, you know, there's, like, certain barriers you can't cross.
Sure.
But someone can just be in their 40s or their 50s and act like a teenager.
Oh, I mean, for sure.
But then there's people who are in their 20s and 30s or even younger who have just had so much life experience mm-hmm. just because of things that have happened to them. Those are people that you can actually lean on for a little bit of wisdom.
Sure.
And so I think it's all dependent on your life experience at that point.
Oh,
now, absolutely. You know, one little caveat, like if you're in your teenage years or in some, or if you're like still developing and stuff like that, there's definitely a big caveat to that. So,
yeah. Not the years in your life, but the life in your years, right? That's the experience.
That's exactly right.
Speaking of life and time and such, I want to make sure that we get to the news here. We touched on a little bit of the news earlier, but what do we have up on the news this week, Melissa?
There's so much news, but I only really have one thing that right now that was just as of 9 hours ago was the speaking of Florida. Earlier, I don't think we were recording when I said this, but there was the state legislature seat in Florida was flipped from Republican to Democrat in a special election. But, you know, they're still trying to do their stuff because that doesn't stop them. The Florida House Committee passes a ban on pride and BLM flags in the classroom. As property and car insurance in Florida continue spiraling out of control to crush people around the state with no end in sight, and affordable housing remains difficult to find as Florida leads the nation in inflation, Republicans in the legislature are laser focused on banning pride and BLM flags. This House Bill 901 would prohibit the display of any non-governmental flags or symbols from being displayed on government property, which includes public schools, colleges, and universities. The bill specifically bans flags which represent a political viewpoint, including politically partisan, racial, sexual orientation, and gender. The bill is clearly targeted at Pride and BLM flags that have become popular for many teachers to display in their classrooms, along with with other flags. The bill passed through its first committee today with a party line 9-5 vote, with every Democrat on the committee voting against it. The new legislation is the latest move from a state dominated by DeSantis culture wars, targeting teachers as, quote, groomers, and accusing them of secretly teaching CRT, and I'm always going to use quotation marks with this garbage, to students. All of this has resulted in a serious teacher shortage in the state. In addition to having one of the lowest pay scales for teachers in the country, many who have left the profession have cited new laws like the Parental Rights on Education Bill and the Stop Woke Act, which bans certain books and changed how slavery and African-American history is taught. So now they are trying to ban flags.
They can't help themselves. I saw something about like Bill O'Reilly's books were getting banned, mm-hmm. you know, because like it, because
damn, where are we when Bill O'Reilly's books are getting banned?
Bill O'Reilly was on Twitter and said that he was going to find whoever chose to ban his books and then put them on national TV and publish their face and publish their name and ask them why in detail did you ban
do it, Bill? Book? Do it. I want him to do that.
I mean, taste of your own
I can't. I know, exactly. I can't stand Bill O'Reilly.
Can you imagine the people in Florida when they find out that there are no steppy snake flags are no longer allowed and their Confederate flags can't be flown? I mean, like, unless, of course, they're specifically making the caveat for explicitly, like, conservative and political. I don't think they did that, did they?
I think they're just trying to say must express a political viewpoint. Because that is the right wing stance.
Right. This is not Black Lives Matter is not political. It's been made political. Pride is not political. It's been made political. So what they have politicized this and then legislated it.
I don't agree with you that it's not political.
Go ahead.
Because I think that things are more political, but it's just made as though it's not to seem that way. Like,
what do you mean?
Well, I think human rights are political. Because
I mean, the human rights is policy. Yes. I mean, it is. It's policy for sure. It shouldn't be partisan politics. Everybody should care about human rights.
It shouldn't be partisan politics, but this is the world we live in.
Of course, absolutely.
And because it is something that is decided in government, even though it shouldn't be, it should just be, hey, you're a good person, right? But it is something that's decided in government, the legal code of law, that they're now trying to even define our language, despite the fact that that goes against freedom of speech. It's... A lot of things are just political in nature, even if you feel like they're apolitical or they're not political.
I agree 100%. And I know what you're saying. Sometimes it frustrates me when I hear folks say, you know, I don't care about this trans issue, you know, because it's the other side of that. It's like, okay, so you don't care about these issues because everything's political. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what did you choose for breakfast? Did you, you know, what type of car did you drive? How much water did you use?
100%.
The politics is everywhere.
I retract because when you hit a pothole, that's politics.
Sure.
You know what I mean? There's everything.
But I also can't stop wearing my politics. Right. Like, I'm a monster.
I mean, there's a bunch of things that you don't think about. Like, if you eat breakfast, you had to buy that food from somewhere.
Right.
And then what regulations went into making that food, mm-hmm. and the people that were behind that, the right. supply chain. Right. How is that regulated?
But I guess what I'm saying, these are not political issues. They're just as this stated, we're talking about affordable housing issues. We have so many things that are not being solved and that actually are legitimate policy issues that need to be handled and dealt with. And instead, they're fucking around with pride flags and BLM.
But that's what they promised. They the entire American conservative movement, just at a high level, is saying big government bad, mm-hmm. or just government bad. They want to cut and they always make exceptions. I understand. But that's the pitch. Okay. That's what they go.
The pitch.
But if you don't believe in just ideologically that a government should do things, it's doing too much, then you know they're going to go and do nothing. Or they're going to do less. And if you are an American and you think, oh, that sounds good, blah, 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 yeah, we want to do less, that's fine. Maybe your life is doing great. I don't think that's the case.
Okay, right.
You know?
No.
What do you think, Sabrina? Is life just great? Should they do less?
No.
Thank you.
More.
No, because we have issues. Mm-hmm. Even if your life is going great, have you all seen that? I think there was a collapse on a bridge somewhere. I don't remember exactly where, but either way, our infrastructure is crumbling. Our energy prices are rising due to companies trying to build nuclear power plants to legally justify raising their prices. And our water is getting contaminated. Our soil is getting contaminated. Mm-hmm. Our food is getting worse. And also, like, there's a bunch of things that you think are so simple, but everything is just kind of crumbling around everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it does take action to fix these problems. And even when you have the problems fixed, that's not the time to do less. That's the time to keep the foot on the gas, because progress. You have to maintain everything. Mm-hmm. Everything needs investment in order to maintain our logistics network and our transport network. Everything we need funding so that we can maintain a good soil for us to grow our food while being able to feed the amount of mouths that need to be fed in this country.
But we don't have central planning. That's socialism.
I mean, there's plenty of food and there's plenty of money in this country.
I'm not talking about central planning. I'm talking about the fact that if you are going to have something as complicated as a supply chain or as complicated as an infrastructure network, or you have an issue where people need to eat and people need to sleep and people need to live, there is a lot of maintenance work that goes into that constantly, and there's constantly needing to be funding and manpower thrown at these problems so that people can continue to live the lives that they've grown accustomed to.
Yeah, but the argument for Americans, because we have American exceptionalism, is pick yourself up by your bootstraps. So there's an entire segment of half of this country that believes that we should be self-sustaining and that the government should not participate.
That's not at all how society has worked for so long.
I agree with you, but that's really where we are right now.
People, Texas is a great example of this. Their power grids, they're failing all the time. It's something that's well known. This is like systemically happens. And then even their roadways in major cities have crumbled. They have not been done in over 20, 30 years. You can look at Google Maps of some Texas cities and it literally looks like a dust, like you just dust bowls, dust roads and everything.
Self-sustaining, then go back to being hunter-gatherers. Mm-hmm. But even they weren't super self-sustaining. They had communities and they had tents and mm-hmm. some of them lived in caves and they went out and they got food and they shared it with their young and they shared it with their community, whatever they found. Mm-hmm. Although it was more primal in the sense that if you hunted 1,000 calories, you ate 1,000 calories, but you still had community and you still had people that came in to feed the kids.
I'll push back on that one. I would even say, and this was a conversation I was having with producer Ty the other day when we were driving home from a day of work. He was saying that the Neolithic man and prehistoric man probably ate better than most of the people driving around today, because even if they did get the calories, think about the big communal meals. They'd have big stews. They'd hunt roast. And the people that would do stuff, and that food would be provided to everyone, and we'd have a higher standard of food and community. So I think a lot of times, you know, depending on how you look at it, you know, I think we put a lot less into our food. But I don't know how we got off on food so much.
Yeah, we did either, but I think it's because
food is so basic and people don't really think about it. But if you want to talk about pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and being completely self-sustaining, where are you getting your food from? Where do you 100%. Work?
Listen, okay? And Americans don't want to go pick the food, right?
Yeah.
They don't want to do the labor-intensive. A lot of Americans don't want to do the labor-intensive work. And then you get into immigration, and then you get into the racism that is just emitting out of the people in our government. But I don't want to get into that, but we're going to wrap up I think we're at a good, probably a good place to kind of wrap up.
I think we've covered our news. We covered everything. I'd like to come back and like talk a little bit about the events really quickly before we wrap up. And I'd like to get some information here about from Miss Sabrina about some of her events coming up. So again, we'd like to reiterate on January 25th, we have our, Resume Success Workshop being hosted by Ezra Rose of Beat the Bots and it's being hosted from 6 to 8 p.m. at the 757 Creative Reuse Center in Norfolk. It's up on the second floor of the MacArthur Mall right past the Lush, and also at the 757 Creative Reuse Center, same place, from 6 to 8 p.m. on the 27th. Thank you. Producer Ty is giving me the 27th. The 27th will be the first of our D&D clubs and tabletop clubs. We'll have some information. You can go online to kaloscoalition.com/events to sign up or RSVP, get your spots registered for the workshop or for the D&D group. And of course, we have our trans family dinner coming up in February on the third Sunday of the month. And Ms. Sabrina, what you got going on, babe?
On February 3rd, I'm performing in the Purple Buffalo in North Charleston. I don't really have a whole lot lined up, but I do have a big surprise coming up, which I can't talk about right now, but there's going to be details that are going to be on my page. I am working on a bunch of things. I have a song that's releasing on the 19th, so in a couple of days. So be on the lookout for that.
And where can people follow you? What's the best place to find your page?
I have a Facebook page. I think it's, I don't really care about my Facebook page.
What's your IG?
IG is SKS_official. I tried to keep the underscore out, but it just wasn't going to go anywhere.
Yeah, with the official.
So instead, I just like, you know, people can just type in SKS music and it would just pop up.
Are you on TikTok?
I'm working on TikTok? I'm working. I am going to move there, and I'm also going to have a second YouTube channel where I'm going to start posting shorts and then have a primary channel be for the posting of long form content and the actual music itself. My Spotify is SKS Music Official. Well, I think that's my SoundCloud. SoundCloud is SKS Music Official. I have a Spotify as well. I think that's SKS DJ recently. I had to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
That's very amazing. Good. So if you go onto Google and you search for SKS Music, you'll be able to find you and all the different platforms on Spotify and different things like that, right?
I mean, I hope so. I'm not super big yet, so I'll probably be overtaken by a couple of other places, but those are my ads and those are my page names.
Awesome.
Excellent. There's one other thing that I'd like to talk about before we go tonight. The Gales Coalition is currently fundraising for a trans wish. We have one of our trans sibs here locally is currently facing eviction and is trying to fundraise money to stay in their current position. They have a job, they've been working very hard and are trying to get even further into a better position, but they've had a lot of things happen to them. If you go to our Facebook page or go to our Instagram at Kayla's Coalition, you'll be able to find the links to our PayPal fundraiser right now. You can also donate directly through Venmo and PayPal, because again, we're trying to make sure that this person's able to stay in their home. They've gone through a lot of tragedy recently. And like I said, part of our mission is trying to fulfill trans wishes, and Cody's not here to say it, so.
Oh, you have to say it, Thea.
Okay. We really do believe trans joy defeats hate every time, babe. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Yay!
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Collective Tattoo and the Kalos Coalition. We are listener-supported, so if you like the show, please consider donating to us on Patreon at patreon.com/talkingtransparency. Like, share, and subscribe across social media, and be sure to visit our Linktree at linktree.com/talkingtrans.